This is The Topic is Trek, episode 26 for Friday, August 24th, 2018. Final score, Deep Space Nine, Gary 7. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already! Well, hello, everyone. Long time no talk. Well, I mean, we've been talking, but we haven't been talking to you.
What sport were we playing? Deep Space Nine, Gary 7.
Well, it's a late-breaking score.
Baseball, of course.
Really. That's right, because it's Deep Space Nine.
Ah, okay. That's a pretty high score. Okay.
Well, there's no sense denying the fact that I've got co-hosts because you've already heard them talking.
Parisi squares.
I'm Clinton, and I'm one of your co-hosts. And joining me, as always, are Mr. Craig Stepp.
Hello.
Hello. And Mr. and Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
Norman coordinate, please.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. Well, it has been quite a long time since we've put out a podcast. Schedules were just all over the place, but we're back on track. And speaking of track, we're going to talk about the Trek track.
Okay, now that's a segue I can get behind.
Oh, right. If you are going to Dragon Con, we invite you to join us for a live episode of The Topic is Trek in the Trek track. And we'll be having our show Saturday, September 1st at 7 p.m. in the Hilton Atlanta, the lower level, in Galleria 2 and 3. So we'll be doing all sorts of weird things. It's going to be kind of a hybrid version of the show. It'll be like the show, but not like the show. And if you don't know what I mean, well, come to the live show and you'll find out.
Hey. Should we mention the other one, too?
The other one? What is this? Like twins? Nobody mentions Danny DeVito?
Yeah. Well, since we've already started down that path, Craig, go ahead.
So we're also doing another panel because one's not enough to give you guys a double header. We're doing the Technorama Comedy Forecast and Friends, literally across the hall at, 8:30?
8:30.
So you can just follow us, the hosts, to the next panel, and you'll know exactly where to go.
And just so you noticed that we kind of tied that all together because Craig said it was a double header. See, in our episode, it all works as one well-oiled machine.
It's a conspiracy on the Dragon Con planners. We're probably up against something like a Shatner-Patrick Stewart panel
that everybody's going to go to.
And no one's going to go see
flying in, literally. Yeah. And
so if you want to join the crickets, Chuck, Craig, and myself.
Yeah.
For 3 hours of madness. It's kind of a marathon for our listeners, I think, at that point.
Yeah. And for us.
All right.
It'll be fun.
But let's get down to the business of why we are here. Wow, I don't even know why we're here, but it's time to open up Subspace Chatter, pressing all those buttons.
Buttons aren't toys.
That literally was pressing all the buttons. Very good.
Buttons aren't toys.
All right, so we're going to start off with a story that comes to us from the Smithsonian via Chuck.
Yes, from Smithsonian, from TrekMovie.com, I should say. Today, a new adult learning platform launched with its debut course being all about Star Trek. Because if it was anything else, it wouldn't be on this show. The new Star Trek Inspiring Culture and Technology course celebrates the surprising cultural and technological impact of Star Trek and was designed by the Smithsonian Institution in coordination with CBS Consumer Products. The Star Trek course is part of the new Learning for a Small World, after all. No, that part didn't.
No, not that. No.
It doesn't just make you want to sing the song, does it?
No.
Okay. It's an interactive community-based learning platform being launched by NetDragon, one of the largest Chinese gaming companies, which has been expanding into education in recent years. The six-week Star Trek course will give users a multimedia learning experience that will sharpen their understanding of Star Trek franchise and its lasting global impact. The online course is co-taught by Dr. Margaret Wittekamp. We'll go with that. Or Wittekamp.
Yeah.
A curator at Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum, and Scott Mance, formerly of Access Hollywood. It features artifacts on display in Washington, D.C., behind-the-scenes looks at Smithsonian collections, and a range of experts from the Smithsonian Institution, academia, and scientific community. Quote, the online course offers a great way to experience the National Air and Space Museum's approach to artifacts and history from the comfort of your own home, says Wittekamp. In a statement, it's a wonderful example of Smithsonian Institution's commitment to reaching beyond the walls of our museums to educate and inspire. The course will also feature Star Trek celebrities like Michael Dorn, Robert Picardo, Walter Koenig, and more. Not
I
mourn,
love more.
Not mourn, more.
Oh, not more. Oh.
I love mourn, yeah.
He's not much so of a tour guide. As a docent, he doesn't do well.
Okay, I was going to say, does the narration. It's not good.
Yeah. Get him to shut up.
All of whom can be seen at the trailer below. If you click through our show note links, you can watch that as well. So we won't get into the rest of it. There is a considerable amount more to read. Good stuff. Coincidentally, there's a picture of NetDragon headquarters in China, which looks, surprisingly like Voyager. I think we've covered this building before.
Yes, we've seen that. They've done a video that shows flyovers, that too, of the building. So it didn't mention anything in here about price, I don't think. I'm guessing that it's free then. I can't tell. I don't know. So it might be something to check out, because if anybody needs to know more about Star Trek franchise and its lasting global impact, it's the three of us. So maybe we should just sign up right now.
Wait, you neglected to include something in our announcement about the live show at DragonCon.
We have prizes.
You have to come just for the prizes. They're something to behold.
Well, don't come just for the prizes. Like, come up on the stage and grab them and run away.
And leave.
Yeah, we frown upon.
It's not a grab bag. Just
so long. Thanks for all the fish.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move away from the Smithsonian, but kind of stay in the history and exhibit realm, because now you can learn Star Trek's 52-year history at the Roddenberry Nexus. The VR experience debuts today being August 1st, at the 2018 Star Trek convention in Las Vegas. Star Trek fans might be enjoying some gameplay sessions on Star Trek Bridge Crew, the Next Generation downloadable content at the moment, but those interested in learning about its history can do so in a new immersive way. Sansar and Roddenberry Entertainment have collaborated on the Roddenberry Nexus, a portal into the Star Trek universe where fans can see the best of Roddenberry's science fiction properties. It is so it's an online experience, but it's a virtual reality experience. In the show notes, I will have a link to a video. The article just is showing still images, and you have to have the Sansar software to actually use this, but you get a much better sense. You walk around different levels. Apparently there are chat rooms. You get close-up images of costumes, props, with narration about what the props are. It really seems like a very nice exhibit in virtual reality. And I'm hoping I can figure out some way to actually view it myself. I don't know,
Clinton. After your experience with Star Trek Online, I'm not so sure that's a good idea.
Well, it does say Windows only. You have to have Windows, which you do.
I have Windows. I have doors as well. But yes, I do have Windows.
And a table. I've heard he has a table and a chair.
I don't think it says 8 gigs of RAM. I don't think it looks too crazy. I don't know if it'll run on your Surface, but
yeah. So I might give it a try. If you give it a try and you experience, you have good luck with it and poke around in there, then drop us a note over at our Facebook page at The Topic is Trek. Yay, there's the ding. The ding is back.
Oh, here you go. You have to experience Sansar on Vive, you must install Steam, SteamVR. SteamVR is not required for Oculus Rift, so I guess you have to have a Vive or Rift or something like that.
What about? Ooh-hoo. At least for right now.
I mean, I've had fun playing around with VR on my phone, you know, with a little cardboard and stuff, but I don't see spending $200 or $300 for a headset, you know, to mess around.
Sure. Anyway, go in with somebody else. We'll all chip in together.
Let's go in thirds. Yay.
Yeah, let's do that. That's one eye for, no, it's not even one eye for, anyway, let's.
We don't wear it at the same time, Clinton.
Oh, okay. All right. I was going to say, I'm very confused by that.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to move away from an actual museum to costumes that look like they could be in one.
Oh, my just God. About. These are awesome.
Yeah, so this is from the Star Trek Las Vegas, and it says they can, this website, treknews.net. They continue their ongoing coverage of Star Trek Las Vegas with a look at some of the costumes that were on display last week in the Sin City. Their words, not mine. Star Trek Las Vegas. Well, I mean, you know, it's not like they're trying to be cool about it. Anyway, Star Trek Las Vegas has become synonymous with having some of the most incredibly creative costumes in the world of pop culture. Alongside the traditional Kirk and Spock uniforms, there are some deep cuts, including Mud's Women, the Gamesters of Triskelion, and the Tholian Loskain, and many more.
There's some dandies in here. I think my current favorite is either Charlie Brown Borg.
Yes.
Or that was Cobra a good one. Kai Wynn.
Yeah. I saw that one too. That was pretty good.
I love the crossover stuff. I just am a sucker when it comes to crossing the streams on genres.
Well, there he is. If you look down, I'm not sure how this relates to Star Trek, but there's like Hogman, like from he's got the
Yes, Vulcan, I saw that one.
He's got the Vulcan what do you call it? The weapon that they Kirk and Spock fought with.
Yes.
But if you look at him, the wingspan on that thing is insane.
Look at the wingspan.
He must live near there because how else would you travel with that?
I'm trying to figure out the bottom center picture of Santa Gorn. He was doing a Vulcan salute. What's the picture?
Actually, if we ever lose Robot Santa, this might be a good one to put in the truck.
Quick, get a hold of them.
Planet of the Apes wearing a gold Star Trek shirt, TOS.
Yeah. And there's the crew of, I forget the name of the ship from Black Mirror.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what it's all about.
Yeah. That dude's got the hair. He's got the look. there's some good ones in there. Oh, the Klingon. I'm sorry.
I know you're saying, gee, that's great. You guys are describing pictures. But remember,
show notes.
The show notes for episode 26 over at thetopicistrek.com has links to everything that we're talking about. So you can click through this article and see all of these costumes. And there are some amazing ones in there.
Kudos to all the work.
Yeah, the Discovery Klingon looks spot on.
Absolutely.
Oh. I'm sorry.
Yes,
you know what?
You saw another one?
Nope. On that same picture, it just took me a second to realize that the guy's dressed up as in the ship uniform from Generations at the beginning. Yes.
Yep.
I was like, what is he doing? Oh. Got it.
There's even some guy dressed up as the tardigrade. How nice.
Yeah, I saw it.
I'd love to go just to look for the cosplay people. This is awesome.
Hey, the split universe Spock was interesting too.
Yes.
He had half a beard and half a uniform from the mirror and the traditional uniform, universe. Okay. I'm sorry. Continue.
No, some pretty cool stuff in there.
Yeah. Like continue with your well-timed segues, Clinton.
Well, thank you. Cause
totally unscripted.
We're We're getting out of Vegas and actually off the planet itself up to the ISS for our next story.
Whoa.
From space.com, assimilate this. Hey. A beloved Star Trek Klingon has inspired real-life science on board the International Space Station, or ISS. A facility watching over Earth borrows its name from Klingon alien Worf, who is best known as the security chief on board the USS Enterprise starship in Star Trek The Next Generation. And he was also in Deep Space Nine and several toothpaste commercials, which shall remain unnamed. No, just making that up. New NASA video reminds viewers of how Worf's name went into space in 2010. A NASA experiment, also called Worf, short for Window Observational Research Facility, because NASA always has to have clever acronyms for their projects, flew to the ISS on the space shuttle mission STS-131. Worf was spearheaded, no pun intended, by Mario Runco.
It sounds so wrong. It just sounds wrong.
A recently retired NASA scientist and former astronaut on space shuttle missions STS-44, STS-54, and STS-77.
I loved STS-77. That was an awesome.
I'm more of a 76 guy myself.
Okay.
After seeing our beautiful home planet from orbit, I wanted to be able to share the experience with everyone, Runco said in the video, 15 of the most bizarre alien species featured in Star Trek. Worf, the experiment, not the Klingon, is an apparatus that allows astronauts or even remotely controlled payloads to do Earth and space science research at a special Earth-facing window in the space station. The window, which is located on the U.S. Destiny Laboratory, is optimized for scientific investigations because the panes barely hinder the view when cameras look through it. I can get through that. Worf can accommodate up to three science experiments operating at its window. According to NASA, Worf's capabilities include structural power.
This is just sounding wrong as you're reading it. Worf is capable of...
multi-talented.
He's capable of warp speed.
In many techniques and positions.
Hey.
You left that door open.
I did. Close it now.
Okay, wait, where is it?
His capabilities. There. Oh, there we go.
I thought I felt a draft.
Up my hand.
Worf also prevents condensation from forming inside the window. This is getting just, now that you've done that, it's now. And it's featured a retractable bump shield that is supposed to stop loose hardware from banging against the window while the crew changes out instruments. The Worf's presence in the space station allows its sensors to image the same location or region multiple times over several days, Runco said in the video. This allows for observations that can show, for example, how vegetation below may be changing from day to day, subtle changes detected by orbital sensors that might be indicative of declining planet health and are rarely visible on the ground in the early stages. And often, by the time there are, it's too late and crops or even forests may be lost.
That is a dead-on imitation of him, by the way.
I was imitating generic scientists there.
Okay.
We'll work on that. Shall I continue? There is more.
No, I think that's right. Pretty cool, though.
Oh, that, you got it.
What?
I got something.
That's enough, Chuck.
No, yeah. Cool. No, the again, people can check out the complete article. It goes into more about what sort of experiments and the things that they will do now that they have this window on the ISS. Mm-hmm. So pretty cool stuff indeed. All right, we're going to move on. I'm not going to segue on this one because we have a bit of sad news here.
Uh-oh.
And that is that Douglas Grinstaff, Star Trek sound whiz, dies at 87.
Do I owe him this? Is that a tribute?
It is, actually.
Okay. The beeps and hums and everything.
Yeah. I'm just going to keep tributing him the whole rest of the show.
Go ahead, Clinton.
Douglas Grinstaff, an Emmy Award-winning sound editor who was pivotal in the creation of the indelible whistles, beeps, and hums in the original Star Trek television series, died on July 23rd in Peoria, Arizona.
My favorite is still this one.
Well, that's when his tape machine wasn't quite working well. Mr. Grinstaff had numerous sound credits to his name, including the television series Mission Impossible, Max Headroom, and Dallas. But but it was his work in helping to bring the Starship Enterprise to life that had the most lasting impact on decades of science fiction films and TV shows and on generations of Trekkies. There was, now here you go, here are your cues. There was the whoosh of the automatic doors opening on the bridge, the coo of furry tribbles in one of the show's most famous episodes, and the unsettling wail of sirens when it was time to shift to red alert.
Wow. And the sirens of whales. I was going to screw that up bad.
Hey, and the sirens of whales.
Yes. That's Star Trek 4. I don't think you have this one. Not to mention the growl of cartoonish reptilian alien Gorn. Yeah, that's somebody snoring. Pieced together using... No. Pieced together using in part the sound of vomiting. Well, there's some trivia for you. And the high-pitched twinkling of a transporter beam.
Transporter.
You can do this.
It's right there, Chuck. Hit that button.
I don't know if I have that on the board right now. Yeah, I do.
Oh.
There we go.
Yes, that's awesome.
Hey!
I had the TNG warp as well. That wasn't it.
He hasn't gone through training.
The control panel beeps and bloops provided a similar ambience for Star Trek. We need some of those. Yeah, there you go. Okay, so there's so much to read here. Again, you can go through the whole thing, but I think you get the general gist of it that a lot of what you associate with Star Trek are those little details, and this gentleman was responsible, Douglas Grinstaff, for a lot of the things that we actually use here on the show. So
thank you, Douglas. Hey, we'll miss you.
By the way, I was just scanning ahead, and it looks like even Ben Burtt, who did a lot of the Star Trek and Star Wars sound effects, he had worked with Mr. Grinstaff about for Star Trek on the feature film, the reboot.
Yeah, I recall the story, when Ben Burtt was brought in, they'd already had the rough cut of the film, and it opens. You know, we see. Why am I drawing a blank on the name of the ship? Somebody, the Kelvin.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hear all those familiar sounds, and Ben Burtt said, "It's not Star Trek without the pings and the stuff." So that stuff was put in there because he was steeped in that. Understanding what that's supposed to sound like.
Yeah. Because you're right. I mean, you go mute Star Trek and watch it.
There's a picture down below. That's really funny. It's a picture of Captain Kirk, waist deep in the tribbles after they ate all the Quattro Triticale. And it says, William Shatner's Captain James T. Kirk was surrounded by furry, fast, multiplying alien creatures in Star Trek episode The Trouble with Tribbles. Doves, screech owls, and squeaky balloons proved useful in creating the sound effects.
Why don't we hear those so we can see if we can pick that out? Play some of those tribble sounds for us.
All right. This must have been doves.
I'd say that.
I'm guessing. All right. And
no, that's the doves.
No, that's a balloon, clearly.
The balloon or the screech owls. I'm not sure where.
And to our last story, takes us back to Hollywood. Well, actually, it takes us to Toronto, I suppose, when you think about it.
Yeah. So it looks like we know the identity of Spock now.
His secret identity is revealed?
Yeah, after
he's actually Sarek's son.
He had some DNA testing. Spoiler alert.
Hello.
Yeah. No, actually, he's somebody else's son. Actually, somebody's grandson. So earlier this summer at 2018 San Diego Comic-Con, Star Trek Discovery showrunner Alex Kurtzman confirmed that Spock, the beloved half-Vulcan second in command of the original Star Trek USS Enterprise, would be appearing in the newest Trek series. After much searching, CBS had announced that the show has cast the role. And everybody, of course, was wondering who. And it's Ethan Peck, whose previous credits include playing Patrick Verona, the Heath Ledger character. Oh, in the TV adaptation of 10 Things I Hate About You. And also happens to be the grandson of the legendary Gregory Peck.
Cool.
He'll be filling the shoes like this. Like Leonard Nimoy, huh?
Does he talk like Gregory Peck?
I don't know, but you go look at a picture of him and his grandfather, and they have the Peck eyebrows.
Mm.
You know, he's got that part of the face down.
He also looks a lot like Zachary Quinto as well.
Yeah, you know what? I think for Vulcans, I think they always work better when they find somebody. And I'm talking like even the ones that you see, you know, secondary characters. Mm-hmm. They work better when they have kind of a longer face. Mm-hmm. Like Leonard Nimoy or something like that. But so I think he's kind of got the look. He's a little more chiseled than obviously Leonard Nimoy, but I don't know. I think I'll do pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm
also curious about how long into this, because he's not there at the beginning. So how long before we actually see him show up? That's going to be interesting.
The last frame, like we saw the Enterprise.
Exactly. It's going to be the cliffhanger for season 3. Yeah.
Michael Burnham goes, we can't find Spock. All of a sudden the door goes, and he walks in and they into season 2.
I expect we can't find Spock. Oh, look, there he is. Oh, God.
I went on a search for Spock.
He's been in his bunk sleeping this whole time.
Has anyone checked the Genesis planet?
Great Scott. And that ends our subspace chatter.
Chatter it was.
And all evening long we'll be playing tribute to Mr. Grinstaff.
You don't need all that subspace chatter.
Yeah, we do. We just did. We had it just now, Charlie.
He's late today.
I'd like to mention that there are, as always, a lot of stories we just don't have the time to get to. So we do put them in the show notes. We have about 10 other stories that I think you'll find interesting as well. So go over to the show notes for episode 26 at thetopicistrek.com, and you can see all of those. But now that we're back on the bridge, it's time to head out on the main mission. And usually in our main mission, we take a Z-minus 10,000 meter deep dive into one subject and try to stay on track. But so much has happened. Why am I doing the Shatner all of a sudden?
I know.
So much has happened since we were doing our show last. We actually have two main mission topics.
Sweet.
So let's get to the first one. The first one is what? Star Trek IV now uncertain as Chris Pine and Chris Hemsworth drop out.
That still leaves Chris Pratt.
It does, but he's
I'll
not.
I'll take that, actually.
Chris Evans is going to.
Chris Rock.
We'll get other Chris's.
I would take Chris Rock on a starship.
We got Chris's all over the place. Not a problem. Now, the story here is interesting that it appears, if we're to believe what's happening in what we're reading in the trades, if you will, that this is coming down to an issue of, surprise of surprises, money. That the Chrises, we'll just call them that for simplicity's sake,
twins,
are viewed as A-list stars. And they're feeling as if Paramount is not ponying up the money for an A-list star. And so they said, well, then we're out.
But it's, I think, yeah. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that Paramount had originally promised them a certain amount. And since Beyond didn't pan out like Paramount wanted, they're like, we should be paying a little less. And that's why the contract dispute came out. That's the one report I read. I don't know.
Well, one of the things that happens, and I believe it happened with this cast as well. I mean, not obviously Chris Hemsworth, although perhaps that they were probably signed to a 3-picture deal for 2009 Star Trek. So that would cover Star Trek, Star Trek Into Darkness, and Star Trek Beyond. Now they have to renegotiate everybody's contract, because that's pretty much the standard. You do the 3 pictures and then everybody goes, hey, it's working out. And so we want more money. As a matter of fact, they didn't even begin the negotiations with Zachary Quinto or Zoe Saldana or Simon Pegg, saying, well, first we're going to secure the Chris's.
Yeah, seems a bit off.
So are your, let's assume for argument's sake that they can sign everyone except for the bridge crew, everyone except Chris Pine to return. Can Star Trek survive if all of a sudden there's no Captain Kirk?
Unless they make the movie about them looking for Captain Kirk.
Oh, the search for Kirk. No,
hey, actually, wait a minute. Whoa. Follow me along here. That would kind of follow along with mirroring the original movie series. So we had the first Star Trek where they all met up and stuff. And then the second one was with Khan. And then the third one, you know what I'm saying?
Search for Spock.
Okay, maybe sort of.
Like we're off.
I've got a movie. I got a movie moving in there. But there, it would line up with. We would line up with the original thing where they're looking for Kirk. And all he's gonna do is make a cameo at the end. They just pay him for the cameo.
Yeah, but does that mean that McCoy has Kirk's Katra? I don't. It's like, is that how that works?
James, Kirk's day
look,
off.
Look, Bones, I want you to remember this.
He just sent me a memo. It's nothing special.
Be a text.
They could do like a Ferris Bueller's day off, and while Kirk is away, the rest of the crew gets to play.
Well, Joe, our friend, Crazy Joe Ferrari, he came up with an idea. He said, "Why don't we take it where Sulu is getting a captain's chair of his own in the Excelsior in the Kelvin timeline, and take the shift away from Kirk's a little bit." I don't know if that would.
I can see that, but I still think that it would be very, it just feels very bizarre if all of a sudden he's not there at all. And yeah. I doubt you'd even get him for a walk on if it's over price. I think it's going to be difficult at best to make this work. And I'm also of the opinion, and I was when this story first came out, that, well, we're being sucked into this negotiation process.
Mm-hmm.
That it's possible that the agents for the Chris's kind of leak this information out, and then fans get outraged, and then the agent says, look, the people demand that you pay them the money, otherwise they're not going to go to see your movie. And Paramount goes, okay, well, I guess we got to pay them.
Yeah.
Or they just say, all right, we're not going to make another movie.
Yeah, well, I think, well, actually, keep in mind that they kind of have two movies in the pipeline.
Right.
You know, they got Quentin Tarantino's version as well, which I am super interested to see how that was going to play out. So I'm totally down for that because I want to see how that works.
Well, there's two problems with saying, all right, well, that we don't do Star Trek 4, in air quotes, because it's Star Trek, 14 or 13. Yeah. And we do, the Tarantino one instead, but the Tarantino one is even further out than the plant. So you would have this gap from 2016 to 2020, 2021, mm-hmm. before you'd have another movie. I feel like if you don't have Star Trek IV as that to fill in that big space, that it's just going to be, oh yeah, Star Trek, yeah, whatever.
Well, I do have a feeling that I'm kind of with you that I think this is all a negotiation tactic, and probably about a week or two or so, you're going to hear, okay, everybody's come around and we're in good shape.
Right. Because we'd already heard stories that they were in prep for the movie. I don't know if they've officially signed on S.J. Clarkson or not. I know that hers was the name.
Yeah.
Simon Pegg has met with her.
They nailed her down.
Okay. All right.
That didn't sound right. That
yeah.
didn't come out right.
Very painful. You don't want to do that. Maybe she won't want to do the movie now. They brought out a hammer. It was not nice at all.
And from what I understood, that she's solid. And so I guess they assumed everybody would be coming back because if I'm not mistaken, when the Star Trek II or whatever you want to call it came out, they announced that they signed them for three more, or two more in a option.
So, okay. All right.
So that would lead up to the Quentin Tarantino one we were just talking about. So, including this, the new one, and then the Quentin Tarantino one. So,
what was also odd about this is that on top of those salary negotiations and the salary negotiations for the rest of the bridge crew, then you toss into the mix that Danai Gurira is also supposed to be in this movie in some sort of key role, the villain, some other, which is going to be another person saying, I'm now an A-lister and I expect to be paid like an A-lister.
Oh, just about everybody in this movie is an A-lister at this point.
Right. I mean, Zoe's got, yeah, I can fit you in between this movie and that movie. So yeah. You got about 20 minutes to do my parts.
Anyway, so I'm hoping it's going to come around, because I'm interested. I like the cast and what they've done. I would, so I'm down for it. How about you, Chuck? You ain't said nothing.
I'm willing to wait. We've waited longer.
Okay, enough from you, Chuck.
Well, we haven't waited that long within a franchise, right? True. We had one long wait, and that was the wait between TOS and the motion picture. Right. But since then, pretty much on a roll, and then you have a huge gap. And when you have that huge gap, you start from scratch. And if you say, well, there's going to be another huge wait, well, this person gets busy, that person gets busy, the price range goes out of control, and you have to say, okay, we're rebooting it again.
Yeah.
So I think it's a shame. I think it's more of a shame, as we've talked about, that Paramount just completely blew it.
Yeah, someone needs to be publicity slapped around beyond for not securing the actors at the right point.
So, well, I think it's also the fact that, they lost money. They claim they lost money, and, Paramount losing money sometimes that's in air quotes, but they just did such a horrible job promoting Beyond that it's like, okay, you kind of made it not make any money. So they really,
I do put that squarely on Paramount, because I think they kind of screwed it over Beyond.
All right. So hey, if you have any,
by the way, wait a minute, yes. By the way, Chuck,
yeah, go right ahead. Yes.
Chuck, did you have a problem waiting between Blade Runners?
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
Or The Incredibles.
Wait, that's it. That's it. We can have complete face replacement actor for Chris Pine.
There we go.
Just like they did in Blade Runner.
Because by the time they come out with this, it'll be Tron. Yeah, it'll be, we'll have that technology nailed down so we can make any actor say anything.
Well, we had a story about that on the topic of Trek a while back, that Shatner had himself scanned, saying, well, you can, this way I can appear in anything as like young Kirk, old Kirk, whatever Kirk you want.
Posthumously as well.
Well, kind of creepy, but we've seen that with Star Wars. So,
hey, we waited 15 years for the Zoolander 2. I think we can wait just a little bit longer.
Zoolander 2 is not the best bar to be hitting.
Well, actually, I'm waiting for African Queen 2. I'm holding out for the African Queen 2.
Oh,
keep
my
going
goodness.
There, Craig.
All right.
That was our first of our two main missions.
Now, what else can we beat up on?
We have a second main mission, which is a bit more exciting and uplifting. And that's the fact that Patrick Stewart is coming back as Jean-Luc Picard.
Can we do this?
Let's wrap this up, shall we?
Yes. Now, he's going to be completely out of my price range for my show. Thank you so much, CBS All Access. Yeah.
I paid my $6.95. I want my audio clip.
Yeah.
Now, we don't know much about this series. We don't even know when it's going to premiere. practically all we know about it is that Jean-Luc Picard will be in it. We don't know if he's on a starship. We don't know if he's the head of Starfleet Academy. We don't know if he's gone back to the vineyards. We don't know. He's gone Borg again. Who knows?
He is playing Jean-Luc Picard.
He is.
Okay. He's not playing an Andorian or something.
He's playing himself. Okay. No. He's playing Patrick Stewart in the Star Trek universe.
It's a role that will surprise you.
I'm curious to know what other TNG characters we'll see pop in.
Well, there was an interview with Brent Spiner, who was just here in Boston for a convention, and he, take him at his word if you want to, says, well, I would love to be on the show. That would be really great, but I don't know anything. I don't know anything more than you guys know. Whatever Patrick said at the convention, that's all I know.
It can be Dr. Singh.
Yeah, well, so I don't know who's going to be on this show. What would you like this new show to be?
I don't know, but one thing I'm hoping that we get out of this is some new Picard facepalm memes.
or him, was he doing the acting? Shall I compare thee to a... Yeah, so we need some more Picard memes on the internet. That's all we need.
Yeah, exactly.
Or one or two Picard maneuvers with the uniform. That's it. The uniform, whatever he's wearing at that point, you have to tug down to make work when you stand up.
He's going to be in the vineyards with overalls on. He's going to have to do the Picard maneuver.
We've already seen the flash forward on that. Yeah. No, I think I don't know.
Would you rather he be in a starship, captaining a ship? Would you think he'd be more in a... Okay.
They said he's not at all.
I would go for either, an admiral at Starfleet.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like in some senior mentorship role, that sort of thing would be kind of cool. Or kind of, if you do the vineyard thing, if he's at the homestead, kind of calling the shots from behind the scenes, make it not subversive, but
like
not,
he's the godfather.
Yes. A godfather captain.
Got a pinky ring and everything.
I'd advise you to go to the Antares sector.
If you know what's good for you.
Once you're in the Starfleet family, there's no leaving the Starfleet family.
I think he did, or they did say that it would be, he's not necessarily in a starship or a captain anymore. So, it's got to be another part of his life. I think to me, it makes sense where you see him off the starship and he's trying to find another path for his life, as he's older now.
Right. I would think, though, that one way you could deal with that is, all right, he's not the captain of a starship anymore, but he travels. Maybe he has a way to, just a small group of people that just travel and explore.
I've got a bungalow on Risa.
Yes, exactly.
It's going to be Picard meets Indiana Jones, because he's an architect.
There's a refrigerator.
Archaeology. That was his hobby.
That's right.
So he'll be climbing through other people's attics looking for old lamps and oil cans and mobile signs and bicycles.
Starfleet pickers.
Today we're going to Kronos. We heard that there was a barn with the...
I found some dilithium crystals.
I shall give you 20 quatlus for that storage locker.
I would buy this, but we don't have money in our...
<We don't> And the problem comes up every single week.
What a negotiator. Okay, we've taken that off the rails again. Yes, that's what I want to see Patrick Stewart doing.
Anyway, I am excited for this. I know I'm not the only one, because I thought he did a great job with that character, and I think there's a lot of possibility. I'm curious what, you know, one thing I did think of is, okay, you know, obviously the aesthetic of the TNG, you know, Enterprise D inside, yes. Thinking of the inside. And then, you know, whenever they went to buildings or on Earth or any place like that, you know, they all look very similar to the TNG style.
Well, you know, Michael Okuda could only do so much.
Wait a minute. So fast forward to Discovery, and, you know, it's a little bit darker, a little more realistic. I mean, I don't know, just a different aesthetic of there. So are they going to make Picard's universe look like TNG or look like Discovery?
I'm guessing that they will make it look like an extension of Discovery, not like TNG.
I'm going to go there, too.
Or somewhere, yeah. Okay.
But the question is that now if you've gone that far out from Discovery, you could very easily swing it again very close to what TNG looked like because you still have that progression. I would think that they would detail things more, but I can see them kind of, you know, like similar to what they did with the Enterprise.
Just had a thought. We were saving this topic for potentially talking at Dragon Con, but this is post DS9 era, right? If Picard is older,
yes.
Dominion War is over. He could have a whole different role there. Think about that when we get to Dragon Con.
So he's going to be Odo now? He's going to have a bucket that he walks around with? Is that what you're saying? I'm not quite sure.
He'll have a bucket.
He's going to hook up with a Ferengi.
Boothby be out of a job. He's got Boothby's
the whole bucket. Show is him. The whole show is him cleaning tables in Quark's.
And nobody rag. Else is there.
Yeah.
Table for two. Try the
holosuite. Go see Vic.
I spotted an error in that show. Deep Space Nine, when they were at Vic Fontaine's. He's singing into a Shure SM58 microphone. The SM58 was not introduced until 1968. And even though Wikipedia says Vic Fontaine's takes place in the mid-60s Vegas style, he actually sits down while he's playing, what was it, Go Fish or something with Quark, and says, hey, I can only play what, you know, did they play that game in 1962? So he nails the date down to 1962, and there's an SM58 microphone, and those don't go together.
But that doesn't
screw that
mean,
prop guy.
Yeah, that's right. But that doesn't mean that that's...
Don't pull out the time portal thing on me here.
Okay, yeah. Temporal police are on this case right now.
they're pulling into DS9 right now to straighten this out.
Hey, where'd everybody go?
All right. If anyone out there has any thoughts, because we know you do have thoughts about what you would like this new show to be sure to post something on our Facebook page and tell us what type of show or what you would like to see Jean-Luc Picard doing as a career, hobby, next stage of his life. And we will mention those in the next episode of The Topic is Trek. The next one we record as a regular show, I probably won't do it at Dragon Con because people will say, what are you talking about? Right. But the next show that we do, our normal show. We're gonna try to put out the show we do at Dragon Con.
If we can record it, we'll release it. How's that?
All right. So you'll hear the madness.
They've been pretty good the last couple of years about giving us the audio. So.
We're in a different track, though. This isn't the podcast track, so they might not be thinking about recordings.
Good point.
So we'll do our best.
It's an alternate universe live
show. It is. But we will save any comments you have for the next regular show. So not the regular show that was on Cartoon Network, but the next show that we record like this. Okay, that
have you confused him enough yet?
I'm confused plenty.
What were we talking about?
I don't know. I just got here.
Warp Speed Roundtable.
Yes, it's time to come back from our main missions. Please come back. Come back. Play some of that. Those great sound effects.
There's our Warp Speed Roundtable.
It's a little more oval.
I was going to say it's kind of wobbly. We should Shore that up with a wedge or something.
A tire balancing or something.
How do you do that with a warp engine? I don't know. Well, they say the warp engines are out of balance, and so that's what that sounds like. It's wobbly. The
antimatter injectors.
Just get Thanos to snap his finger and straighten it out.
Yeah, but then you'd have only one nacelle. It's very, I just can't. You don't want to do that. It's very sad.
They should be using Chevron antimatter with Tecraline to keep those antimatter injectors clean.
Okay.
Let's move on to Warp Speed Roundtable. But first, before we get into this week's topic, following up on our question from last episode, which was if you could choose anyone to be the voice of the computer on the USS Discovery, yes, who would it be? And our listener, our friend listener Diane, wrote in to say, I would have Patrick, and I believe that was Patrick Stewart.
No, Patrick from SpongeBob.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. Hey, well, Patrick Warburton, that would be good as well.
Hey, SpongeBob. Looks like the antimatter injectors are offline.
But you also thought about...
I'm sorry.
Wow. That was Flipper with a cold. We don't do SpongeBob.
Because on this show, the topic is Trek. Excellent. She also mentions Hal. Or the Lost
sorry,
in Space
Captain,
robot.
I can't do that.
Now, she also mentions Gort, but I don't believe Gort said anything. So that would be a very odd computer to have. It's you'd ask it questions, and it just wouldn't say anything.
Stands there. Just like mine. Hey, I got a computer like that.
How about that that bot from Star Wars? Gort, Gort.
Which one?
She also said, how frustrating would it be to have Stephen Wright? Yeah, I had that request once. That would just be horrible. I also posted this question over on Facebook, and we got a plethora of answers. I'm not going to name everybody who gave these because sometimes multiple people gave these answers, but we had Neil deGrasse Tyson, Placido Domingo, Gene Roddenberry, Mr. T.
Or- I pity the fool who turned on my fuel injectors.
Who left the lights on?
This person said Paul Rubens and then said Rex Lives. Now, that's a reference to the Star Tours, but Paul Rubens was also the voice of the Navigator.
He was Pee Wee Herman.
I know he was, but he had it was computer and stuff.
I think I said Pee Wee Herman on the last episode.
The voice of Siri, Jim Dale, who was the narrator for Pushing Up Daisies, I believe.
This one I put in there, I think.
Yes, go ahead.
Bing Rames as Marcellus Wallace.
So we have a little bit of Pulp Fiction thing. Well, it's a Tarantino connection being made there, you see.
Yeah.
James Earl Jones, which would just really mess with everything if we did that.
I think so.
Mira Furlan from
Babylon 5.
Babylon 5. Yep. Morgan Freeman. Majel Barrett.
Oh, that's a stretch.
Which would be interesting. Nichelle Nichols and Betty White, but only as her Golden Girl character, Rose.
Yeah.
Nice finish.
Very specific. You don't want that Betty White. You want this Betty White. So thanks everyone who participated in answering that question. Our subject this week is now we're going to do some more recasting. We already just went through the voice of the computer. I'm saying that now that Jean-Luc Picard is back, it would be interesting to see one of his dear old friends return. And namely, I'm talking about Laxana Troi, daughter of the Fifth House, holder of the Sacred Chalice of Rix, heir to the Holy Rings of Beta Zed.
Oh, mother, it's just a leaky clay pot that leaks.
Yeah. Oh, mother.
Yeah.
Of course, Laxana was originally played by Majel Barrett, who passed away in 2008. So my question is, and this then would have to be a living person in our pre-show, some dead people are saying, it doesn't help to suggest one dead person to replace another one.
Carrie Fisher is a perfectly, she's still in movies.
I understand all of that, but who would you cast to appear as the larger-than-life Laxana?
Oh, boy.
I'm going to be first. I'll throw out my suggestion, and I say Bette Midler.
I was going to go with Cyndi Lauper.
I was thinking Carol Burnett.
I don't think Carol Burnett's around anymore, is she?
Yes, she is. She's got a Netflix special. What are you talking about?
Cool. Okay, never mind.
Everybody has a Netflix special. We probably have Netflix specials.
Even Abe Vigoda. Yeah.
Has it? It's new too, by the way. So that's interesting. I mean, I was.
Sandra Bullock.
I was also thinking of Barbara Streisand.
Zoe Saldana. No,
just put her in everything. No.
I was going to say, this is too confusing. It's like having the James Earl Jones doing the voice of the computer. I can't keep track of this. Well, of course, we already said Nichelle Nichols, so I suppose, sure.
Spock,
so we do that.
Remember who you are.
Melissa McCarthy.
Melissa Gilbert.
Melissa Jones.
Oh, I know. Whoa. Amy Poehler.
Melissa Gates. There we go.
Amy Poehler. There you go.
Okay. We're just rattling off every person we can think of at this point.
And we're not thinking any good ones either. We need your help, dear listener.
We do. Stop saying plural, singular. Plural. Well, I suppose one person at a time can listen, but many people can listen at the same time.
I am only in one person's ears right now.
Oh, okay.
Actually, I could almost see Tina Fey or something like that.
Well, the trick is it's got to be... Majel was this larger than life character, just.
Yeah.
So that person has, which is why, you know, the first thought I had was Bette Midler, because, you know, she's just kind of that larger than life personality.
That's true. Yeah.
But we would like to find out what you think as well. I will post this over on our Facebook page and you can answer the question. Remember, it's, who would you cast to appear as the larger-than-life Luxana Troy?
There are many talented actresses out there, I'm sure. It doesn't even have to be somebody who's played in that genre before or that type of actor, because a good actress will make that character come alive. I've seen some amazing things when somebody gets out of a typecast role. It's like, wow, didn't know they could do that. That's really cool.
Chuck, Meryl Streep is never going to play this part.
Oh, come on, man.
Just letting you know.
They don't have the right budget
now.
For it.
They don't have the budget for anything anymore.
Meryl Streep.
Jennifer Lawrence, this part could be yours.
Actually, I was surprised Meryl Streep showed up in Guardians of the Galaxy, to be honest with you.
Hey, none of these spoilers. What are you doing? Stop that. What? Hush.
Wait, spoiler?
Spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Wait a minute, it's not Trek. You can spoil anything you want to. Go ahead.
Yeah.
All right. So that brings us to the end of the show.
We
are at the end already.
Wow.
We got through all the things in good time.
Okay.
But before we wrap things up and before Craig sings something that's going to get us slapped with a, hey, you don't have the rights to that song.
They won't sue us for singing the song. They'll just sue us for singing.
Exactly. We wanted to mention again that you can see this show live. Don't you want to?
I don't know. I'm a pass.
Yeah. Wait. No, not you. You have to be there.
Yeah.
At Dragon Con on Saturday, September 1st, 7 p.m. in the Atlanta Hilton or the Hilton Atlanta, whichever way, the Hilton that you go to for Dragon Con, in the lower level Galleria 2 and 3, which is the Trek track at
a light way of saying they put us in the basement again.
Yes, they did. And I will let Craig have another mention of that other show that we're doing.
Yes. The other podcast. Actually, well, why are we acting like it's something? It is something.
Why are we acting like it's? Why are we pretending that other show is something? Clearly, it's nothing.
Right.
All right. With the Technorama Comedy Forecast and Friends, I'm using air quotes. I don't know
it's
why.
A good
I'm
thing not on a one website. Of us is now in marketing.
Yeah. So anyway, when you come to this show, you can follow us from there to the across the hall to our other panel and see us do other stupid stuff.
We'll do a conga line from one place to the other.
That's what we should do. We should circle around in the Trek panel and get gather people and go out into the next panel.
Playing Klingon yes. opera as we go.
I just want a big, large poodle at the end, you know, following us. You ever seen the video? No? Okay, never mind.
I'm just letting you hang there for a
second. You ever seen that commercial? What was it? Pizza or something? They had the family was doing the conga line and the poodle was...
Oh, yes. Yes. Okay.
Oh, finally. Oh, what a tough room.
Where did we get to Dragon Con? But anyway, it's time right. to refill the dilithium chamber and get out of here. You can find me at comedyforecast.com, all one word with the number 4, or check me out on Twitter, Comedy Forecast, all one word with the number 4, or Facebook, Comedy Forecast. You get the idea. You guys, how about you?
Yeah, we do another podcast.
Yeah, whatever.
He's only mentioned it a couple times. Technorama Podcast.
You talk it up, Chuck.
Over at chuckchat.com. You can find us there. We've been there for over 13 years. So, yeah, lots of stuff.
My goodness.
You gods.
So, anyway, I think I've been about that long too, so never mind.
Also, still putting out episodes of the Podcasting for Dummies companion podcast. We wrapped up that book like a year ago. We're still doing companion podcasts. It's crazy. We've got another 4.
Well, who are the dummies now?
Yeah, we're just podcasting for dummies at this point, I think.
No, dummies podcasting. We don't know when to stop.
There's so many ways to interpret that phrase. It's like hunting for an elephant in my pajamas.
Yes, how it got my pajamas, I'll never know. Anyway, it's time to hit the theme, boys. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek. Visit our Facebook page at The Topic is Trek or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek,
don't put on the red shirt. The laundry's not done yet.
See you on the cruise.
You put it in with the white.
Who mixed the red shirts with the whites?
Oh, it's just horrible because everything just got all pink and it's not good.
Don't put on that pink shirt.